Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Laters. Ever the camera's moved, it's over there. Hello, how you doing? I'm all confused now. It's the photo show. We've got the usual suspects here with us. Kyle's not here because his wife's not very well at the minute. So love to Tina and him, and get yourself as well, and then we'll see you again in another couple of weeks. We're here for the photo show. We've got with us, top left, Mr. Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. Hello,
good
mate.
Good morning.
Photo ready?
I'm ready.
Written articles on cameras this week as well, so you've swatted up too.
Yeah.
Good man. And then, secondly, we've got Mr. Alex G. Fox in the usual spot. How's it going, mate?
I'm all right. I bet he was one of them swatty kids at school. I bet he'd done his homework before he even went out to play.
Go on. Did you, Forsman? Did you?
Yeah, sometimes, sure. Yeah. I was an honor student, so I did my work.
SWAT.
Yeah, we had something like honor students here. It was like they took you behind the bike sheds and gave you a kick in for being a SWAT. Is that the same thing?
I think not. You never had bike. Did you have bike sheds at your school?
Oh, no. I lived in a small Indiana town, so we had what they call county schools, where kids get bussed in from everywhere. So we didn't have that.
The week in photography news. We've actually got news. That's going to be a first for a while. We've got a stunning new Lycro camera that's we're going to have a good debate about, I'm sure, about. Canon, finally, Canon. Mm. Thank you very much. You've actually released something. And it's something that I might be interested in, but I'm going to wait and see what the other two say, because I'm still a little bit dubious. And
I'll also let you buy me one. How's that?
Fuji at $7,000, mate. Two. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to want you to have sex with me, though, unfortunately.
Okay. Not a problem.
And Fujifilm have released their version of the £1,000 camera that isn't. So where should we start then? Lycro? Lycro camera?
Yeah.
The Lytro camera, this fantastic device that lets you focus afterwards, unquote. I was going to say it's a gorgeous looking thing, but I'm not sure whether it is or not.
Looks like a square kaleidoscope.
It does. It's one of those things you put up to your eye after you've been to Cedar Point or something in Ohio.
Exactly. I have one of those.
But I'm taking it, if you twist this, it'll break. Does the back end twist?
It's extruded aluminum, and it's pretty tough.
I mean, it's a nice looking thing. The form factor looks fantastic. The first thing I thought when I saw the pictures of it, though, is the form factor going to hold up to scrutiny in terms of the type of picture that you take? Because I wouldn't have said that it was particularly stable to hold. Thoughts?
Litro's talking about the fact that the shutter button is like right at the exact center of gravity of the device, so it doesn't, you know, you don't get much shutter shake from pressing the shutter. Mm-hmm. Plus it's an f2 lens, and it shoots at f2 all the time. I can explain a little bit about the tech.
Go
about
ahead.
That
because I can't,
but
F2
I understand f2 aperture. Yeah, okay, but I mean
well, so here's the brilliant idea behind what the Lytro is supposed to do is, instead of capturing, you know, traditional cameras, even digital cameras, even traditional cameras essentially capture a two-dimensional array of colored dots. You know, in the film days, it was colored dots linked to grains of silver in the film. Now it's linked to pixel locations on a sensor, but essentially it was capturing a two-dimensional array of whatever the lens focused on. What the Lytro is doing is capturing what they call a light field, and it actually captures the color, intensity, and direction of light rays that enter the camera. So it is essentially capturing the light rays that are bouncing around the scene, and as much information about those rays as it can. And from that, it's almost like the reverse process of 3D rendering, like they use, you know, in Toy Story and animated films and things like that. They're doing the reverse processes. Instead of creating 3D models and then shining virtual lights on them and then seeing how the light bounces around. What it's doing is recording how the light bounces around and then recreating the image from that information. And it sounds, I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but I've seen it work. It's pretty amazing. And one of the benefits of that is in 3D rendering, when they're making Toy Story, they set up all these models and then they set a virtual camera and they say, put the camera here and use this focal length lens and then use this aperture and focus at this distance. Well, when they're taking those light rays and then basically calculating back to the image, what they can do is set parameters of the lens and have the image rendered at that, like, as if a lens of that setting took the image. So, the lens just has a fixed f.2 or f2.0 aperture, and you can actually change the depth of field and the focus distance after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't actually capture what we think of as an image. It doesn't capture those pixels. What it captures is the information about the light rays in the scene. And then, you know, the processor and the camera, and there's desktop apps and there's web-based apps. But those apps actually process the information about the light rays, and you can just say, focus at this point in the scene, and it will just change the focus.
So, I mean, what we've got here is a very versatile camera that does a fantastic job at recovering focus in an image that you may have lost through the fact that you're shooting with 2.0. But isn't there a price to pay with the amount of light that you're forcing in the time that you're forcing it in? And one of the things that I noticed in the sample images, yes, they're great. They do you can do the focus thing, and it's an active live image. But I got the impression that if I bought this unit, I was going to be paying for version 2. Effectively, because the images are very soft in their focus, and they're very soft in their edges. They're not sharp at all.
I haven't noticed that myself.
I'm just going on the sample images that I saw on the website. But
there is a trade off. So, you know, we're used to saying, okay, we're going to use 12 megapixels. We're going to use 15 or you know, like the Canon, was it the 5D Mark II uses 25 megapixels. Like, we have all these millions of pixels, and it's going to make it even sharper and even better, and the colors could be more accurate. What Lytro does is it trades off that high resolution to capture this other kind of data, this light field data, and be able to do more with it. So the resulting images, once it's rendered out, is actually, you know, something on a level of about 2 megapixels. So this is at least in this form, and with this camera, and there, it's 100% geared towards casual snapshots, casual shooters, and it's 100% geared towards sharing.
I would have said online. suckers with $500 myself, but
well, that's just the cynic in you talking.
No, I mean, come on. I mean, let's go back to being a classical photographer and understanding the relationship of exposure, aperture, and capture speed. And if you're forcing a lot of light through the lens, there is a price that you pay for that. That is the fundamental theory of photography. And in what I've seen on the images that are on the website, It is a massive leap forward. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that the tech isn't really cool and really funky and I really fancy playing with it. But I'm just thinking, if I part with $500, I'm parting with $500 so they can make a better version. I'm not parting with $500 because I actually get a camera that's really functional and usable.
Well, and again, you know, I would like to stress, because if you look at the article I wrote for Ars, you can see the prototype they built at Stanford, and it's a giant
it's a room.
Thing. Yeah, it's a whole room.
Yeah.
It's a whole room with all these stands of different lenses and arrays, and it's hooked up to like 4 different computers, and those are all networked together using special high-speed like switches, and there's RAID arrays and to capture all the data. They've taken that and shrunk it down to a little thing that fits in your hand.
No, there is no way. Please do not misconstrue me. This is cool beyond cool.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that this is not proof of concept anymore. This is asking me to part with $500.
Right.
And that's a different question.
And you're talking about someone who is going to get this is the same person who would buy the very first iPhone in 2007 for $699 versus a person that's going to wait till the iPhone, you know, 3G or 3GS comes out and the App Store is already out and et cetera. definitely, it sounds to me like you would rather wait until, you know, they can build this technology, you know, advance this technology further. And you know, the company's said, you know, the CEO has said straight out, you know, there's definitely other places we can take this, but this is, you know, this is where we're starting. This is just a, you know, it's a snapshot camera for casual users. They share all their images online. You know, it's something that they can't do with a traditional camera.
And you also have
to, what these images do. I mean, you can, and I don't know that the viewer software they have online now can do all this, but they do have a prototype of software. You can actually shift your perspective up, down, left, right. You can change the depth of field. You can actually zoom in, because what they're doing is they capture all those light rays. And then what they do, the software essentially creates a virtual lens. And then there's, you know, the algorithms transform that light ray data as if it were passing through that virtual lens. So the concept here is that you can essentially replace all the complicated mechanical design of the lens with software. And it's not so much this particular camera, although, like you said, it's pretty cool, but it's just that concept, the fact that it can be done, that I think, to me, is the most exciting thing.
It's huge. It's huge. Absolutely. Yeah. You've got to take in mind as well that I am in the process of saving up for a new $7,000 Canon. So there is that too. Alex, you've been remarkably quiet, mate. What have you got to
say? Yeah, I just thought Chris has done his homework. Let's let him go off.
There's no need for me to show my ass this week.
No, I mean, look, a couple of things. I mean, I have been following this for about, it's got to be about 6 months now, this story. And I've been following it from the beginning. The first thing I found out a long time ago, that this is a theory that was, whatever the clever way of saying someone said a theory, postulated, is that the word?
Yeah, yeah.
Over 100 years ago, this theory of being able to take photos in this way. So the theoretical photography, this method has been around for an awful long time. Secondly, when you showed the mock-up, the drawing of how it worked earlier, it looks to me as the reverse of a laser, the way a laser works. A laser works by firing a piece of light within a tube, which bounces around at multi-million angles within the side of the tube, and then a very small aperture at the end then only allows all these multi-directional rays of light to come out in one direction. And that's where you get power from a laser. And it's the same thing in reverse. This is taking sort of a light source, and it's then splitting it up into the multiple directions that the light is traveling back into the camera, and then reading it in the three-dimensional array within a sensor. So, you know, technically, it's, the theory's been around for a long time. They've done very, very well to make it into a pretty little box. I think the pictures we're showing don't demonstrate how small this box actually is. The main picture looks like they're quite large boxes, but they're not. They are actually quite small.
Oh, they're tiny. I mean, let me just find another picture here that we can show. But there's a picture of a Chinese guy holding it in the Ars Technica article, which, you know, this thing's the size of a ketchup bottle.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah, they said different. The length is about the length of an iPhone.
Yeah, so you're talking about going from the Stanford light array at 30 foot across to something that's 2 inches square, and it's got an LCD screen on the back as well as for what you're shooting. It's not just a point and hope job.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, again, this, the technology, I mean, again, before we came on the show, a German company has been working with this technology for a couple of years now. They've produced something that, you know, looks more like a camera. You know, the technology, the idea is, you know, very, very similar. I wouldn't say exactly the same, but, you know, the costs on that are enormous. I dare say they're going to lose an awful lot of money initially to try and sell these things to build up enough funding to then try and make something that's more commercially useful. This, to me, at the moment, and I don't want to belittle it, but at the moment it seems like a very expensive toy. I think, again, yeah, something that comes up quite often in my conversation on here, like the ball we had last week, I think this has got some very, very interesting security uses as well. So not being able to actually focus, so therefore you don't necessarily have to track if you've got, say, a crowd in a football stadium, you could have an array of these shooting the entire football stadium. And then if you've got any trouble, you can then pick out the individuals you want rather than having to chase. And because, you know, with a normal,
yeah, that guy's out of focus, we've lost the opportunity.
Someone else has already gone. So if you've got this as a security camera, if people are nicking stuff out of your shop, and the riots are a good example that we had, you'd be able to just go back afterwards and get a lovely, clean, nice image of every individual running around causing havoc, rather than having to actually chase them all around at the time to try and get individual pictures. So security-wise, it's a very good idea. I can see so many limitations for what I do, but again, you know, someone will come up with some use for this that isn't security, and it'll be fantastic. But I do think it's taken away some of the point of taking a picture yet again. You know, I mean, you used to have autofocus, and now you don't even have to bother with that. I mean, this really is a point and shoot. I mean, if you're going to be able to change the, I mean, I saw some, I don't know if it was this camera or the other camera, where you can actually slightly alter the angle of the shot as well. So you can slightly look round things that were slightly in front to start off with.
Yeah,
You can alter the axis, not by an awful lot, but you can alter the axis. That's probably using this in some sort of X-ray technology would be great. You could X-ray a body, and if you've got a bone or something slightly in the way, or you want to look at a tumor at a slightly different angle and get around something, you possibly could. But as it stands at the moment, it's a nice gimmick. I wish them well.
And all of those conversations reinforce what I was saying about that. If I think I buy one of these things, I think I'm actually paying for the development of version 2.
Mm-hmm.
We've all talked concept. We've not talked actuality and what it could do in the future if they keep developing it. But what we've currently got at the moment is something that's very gimmicky, very small, very undysfunctional, actually, perhaps. But the good thing is, you know, you can put it's an active image. You can put it on a website, so maybe there could be something there that's useful. Some marketeer somewhere is going to find a real benefit.
Yeah.
But in the meantime,
Alex said it was an expensive toy, and he's right. It absolutely it is an expensive toy, and it's not trying to be anything else but that.
No. And especially when you need to save up $7,000 to buy yourself a brand new Canon 1DX.
And one for you too.
And one for you too. $14,000 down the poop chute.
It's got such a way with words.
A Canon 1DX. There we go. EOS 1DX out this week. 204,000 ISO. Up to 14 frames a second. It'll shoot 30 frames a second 1080p or 60 frames a second 720p video.
I'll take it.
And it's going to cost $6,800 when it's released in March. Mm-hmm. Early verdict?
They finally caught up.
Well, hang on. You haven't seen 204,000 ISO. It could be looking down a toilet with the light off. I mean,
I possibly wouldn't shoot at that level.
You might get a bit of grain.
I've already started turning tricks on the corner just to save up.
So you're a Canon Nikon user, aren't you, Chris? Canon
I'm not user. Canon.
You're Canon. Oh, good man. Good man. I've got you pegged wrong then. I like you even more now. Is this making you want to jump from Nikon, Alex?
I want to be nice about the camera, but I don't want to be ridiculous.
Well, we didn't ask you that.
I looked at this and I've looked really, really closely, and I've admitted for a long time I need Canon to pick up. Sorry, I'm far too close to the camera.
Yes,
I need Canon to pick up the game. I need them to be a worthy adversary, so Nikon then pick up and go for it. What they've done with this, I mean, I personally think they've taken a good size megapixel sensor and they've
done it properly.
They've done it properly. They've doubled the size of the holes in the sensor. They're getting in so much more light. They're reducing the noise. And what they have done, which is really incredible, the actual image processor speed, this dual Digi 5 plus image processor thing, it's in another planet, it's in another stratosphere. It is so unbelievably fast, and it can process these images so unbelievably quickly and well. I mean, it's 12 to 14 frames a second, but you've got 12 frames a second at a very, very, very good quality 18 megapixel full frame sensor. Now, if you want more,
I think it's 12 frames a second raw too.
Yeah. And if you want more than that, then, well, then you're going to have to go to Mars and see if
go and buy a medium format camera for $3,000 more.
Yeah, and then you won't be able to shoot more than about 2 frames a second anyway.
Canon have done a 14 frames a second camera before. It was out in 1984, would you believe? And
The F1.
And it had more than the odd servo in it by the looks of this picture.
I've seen a F1. I've handled one. I don't know. Have you ever?
No, I never have.
It's a beast. It's great. Yeah.
No kidding.
I think I've been caught speeding by one of those.
Mm-hmm. It was a special version of the F1 too, not just the standard one, a special version of it.
I thought the F1 show was on a Sunday or a Monday evening.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Nikon F5? Maybe Alex does.
Yes, no. I do. Yeah.
Okay. It was like the 1980s version of that camera.
It still looks great to me.
I mean, it was heavy.
It does. Very angular.
Heavy and just tough and metal and just. It's a beast.
Well, most of the £1,000 overpriced point and shoots now have got that textured vinyl surface on them anyway, so it's it's perfect, and it's got the Canon writing like the old Leica writing and stuff. And that's actually what people don't realise there is that's a 400mm f/2.8 lens on the front. That's how big that thing is. I mean, it's a house. It's actually a house. There's a door there now at the front. You can't see it.
But they had magazine. You had to get the film on those 100-shot rolls, didn't you? Uh-huh. Had a magazine underneath.
Yep.
Yeah, they were good fun. I mean, I didn't necessarily use them very much. I tend to take one picture every 15 minutes. But, that would have taken me about 200,000 years to fill up. But a lovely camera. But back to this EOS 1DX.
X for extreme.
I mean, I will just finish off what I'm going to say so you two can, make love to the camera when I'm finished. But I just think this is about time too. We've been moaning that, Canon isn't playing the game. Canon needed to do something, and I think they've done it.
If it's really any good, yeah. I want
to
have a play.
It's not going to be bad.
I'm not hocking over $7,000 until I've had a play. They can stick it.
But there is also the fact that your photography is similar to mine, as in you have control of nearly every variable. So there's not an awful chance you're going to get a lot of noise when you're lighting it yourself.
Yeah.
So to spend $7,000, unless this is remarkably better, your style of photography and even my style of photography, when we can just up the light, etc., isn't necessarily going to make an awful lot of difference to us. But for sports photography and things like that, where you might be dealing with low light or changing light conditions and super fast moving players and, needing to use long zooms and things, this has got the numbers that matter. Yeah. And it's not the 18 megapixel. That's not the number that matters. It's all the others.
Yeah,
I shall leave you two to salivate.
With this one, I mean, you're talking about something that apparently as well, when the mirror's up, you can still servo AI on your subject as well, and it'll still adapt and change even at 14 frames a second. And it does do 12 frames a second in RAW, as you said, Chris. I love one of the comments at the base of the page on this thing, because the guys came out and he said, "Why is it that Nikon and Canon still feel the need to have their names so similar? Why does the X need to be in the model? Because it's got the D3X for Nikon as well. Why do they continue using the D designation anyway? We all know this crap's digital nowadays." And he's absolutely right. Why put a D in it? We all know it's bloody digital. He said a different word, not crap, but there you go. It's kind of like crap. Fujifilm have released the Leica Esc X100 Special Edition, and Leica have released a camera as well, actually, this week, haven't they? They put out the Leica D5 Lux Titanium at 20... what was it? It's a ridiculous price. $26,500. Moving on. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Fujifilm, what's that retailing for? Because I can't find a price anywhere on it. Have we got a price?
I think 600.
Much more like it. $600. Yeah. Bucks. Now, that's the kind of price that a decent point-and-shoot should be. Definitely not one of these £1,000 jobs.
I think I got a press release recently. I want to say maybe 600, maybe 700 max, but I can't find it in my email here, but, yeah, I want to say it was like, I remember seeing the price and be like, yeah, I'd spend that for that camera.
It looks like an old Rolleiflex, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Very much like the old Rolleiflex. It's got their own lens on the front, and it's got like a tiger skinny type or snake skin type finish around the outside of it, which I'm sure really isn't snake skin. I think it's a very nice looking camera, and at $500 to $600, I think it's very sellable. Definitely.
They've got nice old retro leather flip round case for it as well.
Mm.
I would love to be seen holding one of these rather than a great big horrible SLR.
I agree. But,
if I was going on holiday, if I can ever afford to go on holiday again, I'd love to be seen on the beach on Nice or set somewhere in the south of France with my long sideburns, my really dodgy mullet, taking pictures in my Speedos with one of these. It would be lovely.
Yeah.
I love Alex Fox, dodgy mullet. There you go. That's the title for today.
If I could grow the hair on top, I could have a mullet. I'd have a bit of trouble.
You don't need that. It would be more dodgy for the fact that you have nothing on the top. That would be... That would be perfect. Thumbs up for this camera. I've got to say, I think yes.
Yeah. Styling, 100%.
Oh, styling's beautiful, and it's functional, and it probably works pretty well. Downside, only 200 available, I'm afraid, and they're all being sold in Hong Kong, so you're going to have to get a plane ticket over there to get it. And apparently the skin is ostrich skin, not snake skin.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, I'll wait for the Chinese copy to come out.
Forgive my lack of competence. I've never skinned an ostrich.
Well, you've never lived.
not I'm prepared to admit anyway. Shall we do some questions?
Yes, please.
We've got some good questions. First one's really nice, actually. Hi, guys. Love the show. Since you only briefly mentioned the Adobe Magic Blur thing the other week, I'm interested what you think now. We've had a couple of weeks and some have seen some results. And what you think about it a bit more. Cheers, Mark in Cardiff.
Go on then.
I've got to say, I've seen a few images for it, and the one thing that surprised me was how badly it does with some of the stuff that's a little bit more heavily blurred. I saw the promo image that Adobe had showed and how it cleaned it up, and it looked fantastic. But actually, when you analyze it, there's a lot more evidence of stronger edges in that image. And when you give it an image where the edges... almost a truly blurred image. It does a very, very poor job. I mean, it doesn't improve it in 10%. It just didn't change the image at all.
I just would like to remark at how unimpressed you are with impressive things.
No. I'm not. Did I just say that? Is that me? It looked very impressive on the demo that they did, and everyone gasped in awe at the degree, and it did look fantastic. But someone then had a go with an image that was a proper blurred image, and it didn't change it even 1%. It didn't look any different than the one previously because the software was looking for an edge and couldn't find an edge, therefore it just assumed that there was nothing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very specific function, surely, no?
Sure.
Well, a lot of these things, it depends on...
Remember when Photoshop didn't even have layers?
Yeah, okay, fair point. I'm just expecting too much.
Right. No, I was going to say, a lot of these things, they'll do maybe 50% of what they claim to do. And if you give them the right image, they handle it really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got to be the right image. The claims are always just a little bit too clever. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of the sharpening of things that you get anyway with Photoshop. You've got to be subtle with them. There's a crossover point with all of these things that if you overdo it, you may as well have not started. You know, less is honestly more in a lot of these things. And a lot of pictures that are slightly blurry and you need to do something with them, a lot of the time you're probably best up leaving the viewer to make up their own mind, to give it a little bit, but don't overdo it. And a lot of these one-stop shop things, they are either full on or they don't do anything. And I think that's a case in point with this again.
It's like auto corrections. I mean, sometimes it works really well and it brings in your white balance and adjusts your contrast just right. And sometimes it makes it look like total garbage. If your image isn't, I don't know, average enough or whatever, it just looks like
I mean, based on what you've just, you know, now you've given me a slap there, Chris, and it's a fair point.
I didn't mean to be a slap.
No, it was a metaphorical slap. I'm fine with that. But the thing is, now that you've said that, I'm sitting thinking about content aware delete and how in the last sort of 12 months of playing with that now, I've got to the point where I can look at an image and know that content aware delete is not going to help me. But right. I look at other images where I know it's going to do a fantastic job, and it generally does. So there is that thing. I think the thing that annoys you, though, and the thing that separates it is the claim that's made with it is that it will refocus blurred images. Well, okay, you know, I've added on the it'll refocus all blurred images, but it you know, there's a certain element of the claim doesn't meet mm-hmm. the expectation of what actually is delivered in the end, perhaps a little bit.
But that's really all it is. It's an auto. If you could take Smart Sharp and Unsharp Mask and maybe a couple of other bits and pieces, combine them into one auto function, and let it have a guess at it. That's all this is doing. It's not doing anything that we couldn't do if you had Photoshop.
Okay, I've been a bit harsh.
No, I mean you've just been you. Just been you.
Just been me.
Everything sucks.
Question two. Hi, Kyle, Chris, Alex, and Ewan. I'm pretty new to photography, and last year got my first DSLR. Now I'm looking at buying a tripod. I'm a little phased by all the choices. Is there a measure as to how much I should be looking to spend and what features I've got to look for? I don't mind spending the money, but I don't want to get too crazy right off the bat. Carl in Salt Lake City. Chris.
This is a tough one. When I worked at a camera store, we carried the Bogan or Manfrotto, as they go internationally now, and Vivitar, and the Vivitars were cheap. I think the most expensive one was like $100, and it was pretty fancy, you know, for a cheap tripod. So you kind of had that range, and then the Manfrottos were like sort of our, like, you know, deluxe ones, and they had a less expensive one that started around, you know, $120, and it was like you know, kind of a good for a starter tripod, and then it went on up to like $300-$400 for really nice ones. So what I would recommend, honestly, is go into your local shop and you know, ask some questions. You know, tell them what you like to shoot. You know, do you like to shoot sports, or do you like to shoot landscape, or do you like to do macro stuff? You know, tell them, and they can probably help you narrow it down to some of the choices. You know, there's like some have special rods that it can be turned vertically or upside down, and you can do all these different weird angles with them. Or, you know, some of the tripods are heavier duty, so they, you know, if you're going to do a lot of outdoor stuff, you know, they're a heavier duty one usually will last longer. And, but my advice is, yeah, you know, get the an expert opinion if you can, and probably
without wishing to be facetious, mate, that's why he wrote to us.
Yeah, well, you know, but unfortunately we don't have any information about what he likes to shoot or how he likes to shoot or what camera he's using.
Fair point.
We just know it's a DSLR and he likes photography and he wants a tripod, so I mean that narrows it down to all of them.
Alex, what have you got to add?
Right, criteria. Sorry. Number one for me is how heavy is the bloody thing? Because I've got to carry it around all day.
I was going to say, I mean, you've seen my tripod, mate. And true, but my tripod goes up to 8 feet, and it's the poles are sort of an inch across each, and it weighs a bloody ton, and it's still not the biggest out there on the market, I agree. So, I mean, the carrying aspect of it is a huge part. Spot on, mate.
I mean, I carry around a full-size Gitzo tripod. I don't know what it's made of. Bricks? I don't know. Solid lead? I have no idea. But after about...
Breeze blocks.
I mean, I have in a tripod bag with a strap that goes over my shoulder, and I can go for about 2 minutes before the strap starts cutting off the blood supply in my shoulder. Now, this thing...
You know they make those in carbon fiber, right?
Oh, they're just not strong enough for my cameras. They really aren't. I do have carbon fiber. I mean, I've probably got some under the desk where I'm sitting. The other thing is all my tripods have a ratchet handle. You can get ones where you undo a little nut and you can lift up the center, I don't know what you call it, the center pole, whatever this mm-hmm. probably got a proper name. I use one with a ratchet handle, so you can get absolutely minuscule adjustments on height. And if you're trying to shoot something that you need to square up, excuse me, one of the problems you get with the angles is the height is a real issue, because you've got to angle the camera to square something up front to back. So the main thing is to be able to get very, very finite adjustments on it. And I always use a winding handle version. They are slightly more, and they do tend to wear out slightly quicker, because that's another part to wear out. And also the other thing is, get a tripod where the legs have got two positions of open. You can open them to the normal standing position. So, and then there's like a little release at right at the top, which will then open it out a lot further. So I can't demonstrate. So you'll start off with something that's normally about 30 degrees, and you can open it almost to 90 degrees. Now, that's really important if you want to, say, stick your tripod on stairs or anything like that. And also landscape photography, you'll find you can get 2 feet down really nicely on the ground, and the third foot might need to be jammed into a rock that's by the side of your hip or something. So you need that extra ability to open the tripod out. And the thing is, pick the gadgets you know you need, stick to them, then go for price, because there is a massive difference in price. And if you're not going to buy a particularly heavy one, don't spend the extra money, because of, say, the very expensive carbon fibers are a bit stronger and are a little bit lighter. But if you're not buying an enormous tripod, the difference in weight is not as much as the twice the price you'll pay for it.
I think the thing I'd say is, you know, why do you buy a tripod? It's to keep the camera still. So if it's keeping the camera still, it's doing the job that you're asking, then that's all that matters. And if you then look at the environment in which you're asking it to keep the camera still, if it's doing it in that environment, then you're still saying yes to it. I've got a big tripod that I use, and realistically, you know, if I'm shooting something at long range, 400 mil or something like that, some sport or something, then that stability that I get from that huge tripod is essential, and I wouldn't get it from anything else. However, 6 weeks ago, I went into my local Aldi store, which is like a budget store over here in the UK, and I paid £12.99 for a Tevian aluminium tripod. That's a piece of crap, but it's a piece of crap which holds my camera still. So, and it weighs nothing. It's absolutely nothing. Comes with a bag, has got a strap as well as, and for £12.99, it does the job for 80% of what I need to use it for on a day-to-day basis. I just need it to hold the camera still for a short period of time at 1/60th of a second or 1/25th of a second or something like that, and that's it. So find something that does that and buy it.
And that's what, you know, those Vivitars were for us at our store. I mean, I think the one we sold the most of was about like $32. It was not the smallest, but it definitely wasn't the biggest by any stretch. It was pretty lightweight. It was, 40% plastic. The rest was aluminum. And it, you know, it was really popular, and it worked for, like I said, for most people, if you've got a, you know.
Well, I bought two of these things and I just saw them as basically disposable. If it crapped out, so what? Fair enough, we'll move on. You know?
Just a couple of quick things. Quite often, you'll need a head to go with that tripod. Quite often, you'll be able to get a very good deal if you buy the two at the same time.
Do you know what surprised me, mate, is this little 12 quid one that I got from Aldi. It came with a head with a detachable shoe plate to fit into the bottom, so when you could fit to the camera, and then you could snap the camera in and out of that, which is, I mean, normally you're paying 50 quid for that feature alone in something.
Yeah, I've got quite a few. And the other thing, which is really, really important, and a lot of people don't realize, is when you shoot with a tripod, shoot with a remote cord. Do not ever try and press the button with the camera on the tripod, because of, you may as well not bother having a tripod, because you will wobble it.
Well, I mean, if you're talking a 30th of a second, you could probably get away with it, or a 15th of a second, but any below a 15th, you really are absolutely cored, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, for the couple of pounds or whatever the equivalent is in dollars you're going to pay for it, use a cord. Plus, you're not kicking the tripod. Whenever I try to, I end up leaning over the tripod and kicking it. Remote cord, you get it set up, you get out the way, and you take your picture.
Great. Love Skype, don't you, Chris?
I know.
Last question.
Fine. I hate Comcast.
Last question. Hey, guys, I recently made a bit of a cock-up. I was shooting on an SD card and took it out to replace it and carry on shooting. Midway through, I was distracted by a phone call You can see where this one's going, can't you? And accidentally put the same card back, sorry to laugh, in the camera. I formatted it and shot about another 10 pictures before I realised what I'd done. Is there anything I can do, or are the images gone forever? Thanks for all the useful advice. And I'm sorry, I'm a useless and I can't say that word. Mike in Gloucester. Chris, Alex, you start us off with this one. Go on, because Chris got this.
I've got some stuff called, I don't know what it's called. I found it on an old PC that I booted up the other day. It came with something like ScanDisk. It might have been called Restore Pro or something.
Yeah.
It depends what format you do. Some formats, the non-destructive formats, all it does, it tells the camera that it's ready for you to wipe over the top of that the next time you take a picture. They can be recovered with this recovery software. It might have been called Recovery Pro when I think about it. The other type of format, which is the destructive format, which actually takes some time to format the card, maybe sort of 5 to 10 seconds, you're buggered. But if you did a quick format using the camera, in general, it doesn't actually format the camera. It just tells the camera, or it puts a note on the card for the camera saying that this space is available to be used up next time someone presses the shutter. So if you, I don't know if this stuff, it probably does cost because I got it with the purchase, but you may be able to download a free piece of software. And if you're lucky enough, it will be able to find whatever was on that card that you haven't gone over, and it will be able to produce some pictures for you. So if you're lucky, if you're really lucky, it will still be there.
A lot of cameras, the software gives you a difference between erase images and format card, doesn't it? Those are the two separations there in what you're talking about. If you've elected for erase image, you've got a good chance. If you've gone for format, you've probably got less of a chance.
Probably less, but quite often, I don't think it actually does the zero-bit cancellation, which is like the full format thing. So I got a feeling, I'm erring on the side of, let's see if we can give this guy some hope, even if it's all gone.
Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, here's what's technically happening in the background. When you delete an image, it goes, each card has what's called a file allocation table. It's a little part of the card where it keeps track of where all the files start and end. And when you go and delete a file, it just goes into that table and it says, okay, here's file number, picture number 9, it starts at this data location, ends at this data location, and it's just going to delete that entry. The data itself, the bits that make up that picture, are actually still on in the memory cells inside the card. When you do a format, instead of deleting each entry in the table, it just deletes the whole table and creates a new one. So even in the case of a card,
I can't finish his sentence, unfortunately, but he's got his cast out.
Even in the case of a card that's been formatted, unless it's been, fully formatted.
Written again.
If it's been written again, you're buggered completely if it's been written again. But if you've just formatted a card, there is a strong chance, unless it was a full format. You used to do it with floppy disks, if you remember. You had quick format and full format. Full format meant you were buggered. Quick format just took away the allocation table and you could recover the files if you were quick enough.
Basically, Mike, these guys are trying to be kind to you, but I would say that if you want the doctor to be straight, mate, I think you're knackered because you started shooting again. If you hadn't started shooting, I think you'd have had a good chance.
He's in a good mood, isn't he?
Bah, humbug. Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. They're the people that are keeping all of the shows afloat on the network. We've had a great relationship with them for 2 years. They've picked up bandwidth and they've picked up all our bandwidth, and that now has gone stupid since we've been doing video. And they've given us unlimited bandwidth on the server, and they don't care. They love us to bits and we love them to bits. Please, 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 I know I keep asking, but please support UK2. If you want to buy any services, go to bageltechnews.com and then use the click through. And when you buy what you want to buy, use the offer code BAGELTECH. You'll get 15% off, which is a fantastic deal. And also, if you're transferring services in, you can use the Bagel DNS offer code, and that'll get rid of the DNS management charge, which comes along with UK2 as well. So that's worth about 15 or 20 pounds. And for God's sake, use the code. The only emails we ever get off them I keep expecting emails every time they come through from Craig there. I expect him to go, oh, you know, we've had enough. We want to stop sponsoring you. And all he says is, fantastic, getting loads of throughput. Thank you very much. Lots of service being sold. But can you get them to remember to use the offer code? Because everyone forgets. Nobody, I can't believe that people would not use the offer code BagelTech. They're coming from our site, but not using the offer code. I need to put some on there, perhaps. It'd be good if I could embed it automatically. And the other thing is you've got a competition. If you go to bageltechnews.com and scroll down, underneath the UK2 logo, what you'll see is another little logo that's very like that, and you can win a Nintendo 3DS with it. All you got to do is click on it, answer the question of how many terabytes there are on the VP400 server, or the VPS400 server. And once you put down that there's 2 terabytes, you get entered in the competition and you can win. You'll get a year's free hosting if you're second prize, and you'll also get an iTunes card at £25 if you do. And finally, please, 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 vote for us in the European Podcast Awards. This is the last kind of push, if you like. We need to really kind of drive it home. I would like, yeah, okay, it'd be great if we won something because of the fact it's recognition for all the effort that I've put in for the last 3 years. But what you guys have got to remember is that there's a whole pile of people who help BagelTech stay afloat. I couldn't do all of this on my own. Russ designs the website. He's been doing some stuff for some end credits. Sarah manages and maintains the website and does a great job keeping everything up and running. These guys come on the show, Alex and Chris and Kyle as well comes on 2 shows, and there's a whole pile of other people who turn up on other shows, give up their time free of charge just to come and talk and run everything for you guys. So I would really love for us to get the recognition for everyone that's involved with BagelTech, that we really were recognised as one of the premier podcasts in the whole of Europe. And I think we are. I really think that we do try hard.
I'm in it for the fame, baby.
Yeah. So please, go to bageltechnews.com. There's links there with all the logos. Click on the logos. It takes you through. Give us 5 stars and then go back and close your browser and open it again and go back and do it again. And you can do it as many times as you like. There's nothing stopping you as long as you close your browser and open it again between. Please register as many votes as you can for all the shows, and hopefully we'll come away with a bit of a gong this year, which would be really nice. Like I say, it's not just me wanting it for me. It's because there's so many people that give so much to BagelTech. I'd really love for them to get some recognition as well, other than me sending them an email once in a while that says, I'm sorry, I can't pay, but thank you very much. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris?
I am always writing for Ars Technica, so you can read my
good article this week, mate. I enjoyed reading the article. That was my choice of reading, was to learn about the Lytra camera. Was your article? So
great, thanks. So arstechnica.com, you can check me out there. And also I'm on Twitter. 24/7 roughly, at Forsmac.
You need to follow me on one of my profiles, mate, so I can actually DM you instead of sending you. You're not following me on anything.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you're not following me on anything. Follow me on BagelTech News and then I can send you a DM.
Okay.
Alex,
I thought I was following you and Rankin, but there's like 10 you and Rankins.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll have a look. I'll try that. Alex, where can we get you, pal?
Let me just check. Twitterything.com. I'm reading it off the screen. Alex G Fox at Twitter will do.
Good man.
And
we'll send you an email.
Other places.
At twitterything.com if you want photography work.
Yeah, if I'm in the mood.
That'd be good. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk if you want any photography work in as well. Just like Alex, I'd be happy to have any. It's not a problem. Gladly do it. Gladly help you out. No worries. Cheers. Thank you. I'm on Twitter at Ewan Rankin. I'm also on Twitter at BagelTech News. We'll be back in 2 weeks. There won't be anything next week, unless you guys want to run the show by yourselves. That's fine. I don't mind.
Wouldn't start fighting?
Based on the fact that Chris hasn't maintained a Skype call for 50 minutes on 2 occasions now, I think it's probably not going to work if he tries to host it.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just call Chris from the mobile and we'll just record the conversation.
Do it.
And stick it
no, out. Seriously, do it. Just have a chit chat on Skype on audio and I'll post it. It's fine. Email it to me. I'll stick it up. No worries.
Are you up for that sometime during the week, Chris?
Sure.
Do it.
Yeah, all right. Well, okay.
Do that. No, seriously, do it.
I follow you on something. I'm not.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine. Yeah, definitely. But no, do that.
I saw something.
Eric Lanigan's doing the big show. I think he's going to broadcast at the normal time, but it's going to be audio only. I don't think anyone's doing the Mac show. But if you guys want to do the photo show, that's great. I'll post it. Yeah, no problem at all.
I think we could invite a special guest or two.
You have whoever you want on it, mate.
Yeah. Wow, I'm all excited.
The only thing I know, Alex, is it won't be greedy.
Yeah. Let's take over the show, all right?
Do it.
Don't let them know.
Mate, I'd love to be able to sit and do sod all on a Friday. That'd be lovely.
Like the rest of us.
Right, I'll be back in 2 weeks. These guys will be back next week with the show, so tune in, see what happens. It could go anywhere.
It probably will.
True.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.